Chapter 9
"Katha," Gorm said, knocking. "It's morning."
He knocked several more times before the oak door to Katha's bedchambers finally opened enough for the elf to poke her bedraggled head out of the door.
"Mm-hmm,"
she asked.
"It's time to go."
"Hmm?"
"To the Mirewood? On the quest?" exclaimed Gorm.
The ranger winced.
"Shh! Just shh! Are you not ready? The whole caravan is waiting for—"
Words failed Gorm as he pushed the door open. Katha was still wrapped in a bedsheet. The room was a wreck, littered with bottles and armor and debris.
"What happened in here?"
"I needed a little more drink," slurred Katha. "I needed to take the edge off."
"Are you still drunk, after all night?"
"Just a little more," Katha insisted. "Besides, we don't leave for sunup."
"The sun's been up an hour."
"Then you're late," Katha burped. Should've got me an hour ago."
"What the burning hell has happened? You were supposed to be keeping it together."
"Hey, first of all, I'm up before noon," said Katha. "Point B, I woke up alone. And number four, I'm still stand—"
Oop! The ranger tripped over her blankets and toppled onto the bed. Gorm rubbed his temples. The heroes were already behind schedule. Now it was doubtful they'd leave much before lunch.
"Okay, I admit I'm not standing," said Katha. "This is still going pretty good. For me."
"Well, you need to do better," barked Gorm. "This is the kind of stunt that gets heroes fired, or killed, or both."
Katha leaned over the side of her bed and heaved into an empty chamber pot.
"Bloody bones of thrice-cursed gods," swore Gorm. "Gleebek!"
"Gleebek?"
The goblin poked his head in the door.
"I need water here."
"Grot?"
"You know, water, drink, water,"
said Gorm, pantomiming with his free hand.
"We need to clean her up."
"Tigrerut Zergog!"
The goblin hurried away.
"I'm sorry," said Katha, in between violent fits of heaving. "I know it's bad. I know. I'll do better. I'm sorry."
"See that you do," said Gorm.
A part of him envied Katha, the part that still wanted to seek peace at the bottom of a bottle. The rest of him, however, needed to get this quest on track, and he was relying on the ranger to help it stay that way. It was too early for this. Still, Gorm had been pulled from his fair share of gutters. Heaving something between a growl and a sigh, he hoisted Katha into a better position and started cleaning her off. She scrutinized him through bleary eyes.
Your armor looks bad. Messy."
"I tried having Gleebek polish me gear."
"Really? It doesn't look like—" "Did he shine any of it?"
"I ain't sure. Depends on how far he got before he drank the armor polish."
"Ah."
Katha looked Gorm's outfit over with an appraising eye.
"He's not a very good squire, is—"
"Worst squire in history," said Gorm.
Gleebek returned a moment later.
"The Tibbets Skakalago,"
he said, presenting a bottle of wine.
"Good goblin," said Katha. "Give it here."
"What the bloody bones are you doing?"
hollered Gorm. He snatched the bottle away and instructed Gleebek to watch Katha in his stead.
"Here, you help her get clean. Lass, we leave in an hour if I have to tie you to your horse, understand?"
"Das putte Kapsa."
Katha nodded, and then bent over the bed for another round of hurling. Gorm stormed down the hall. What kind of quest was this going to be if they couldn't get to the city walls without the party falling apart? He stopped a passing acolyte, handed her the wine, and instructed her to bring a bowl of water to Katha's chambers. Then he headed back to the temple's stables to see how the others were progressing. The Almatrans were holding a small ceremony for Niln in the courtyard, although few of the attendants and none of the heroes seemed to be paying attention to the affair. Most were preoccupied with getting the heroes' mounts and gear ready for the journey. Geist sat perfectly still atop a rather unnerved-looking mare, all of his gear in place. The mages and Heraldin were still adjusting their equipment or seeing to the horses. Gorm's own horse was prepared, as was a mule for Gleebek to ride.
"Today is an auspicious occasion," High Scribe Palathan announced loudly, waving a scepter with a falcon's head over Niln. "We celebrate the departure of Scribe Niln and his company of heroes."
"I think he meant that to sound differently,"
Laruna muttered to Gorm.
"I ain't sure he did," Gorm told her. "Come on, we've much to do."
And yea, the heroes did set forth on their journey to retrieve yon burial stones of the sons of Og-Magurd, which the orcs called Gargaist Durgarg, and the elves called the Elven Marbles. Niln wrote his latest scriptures by the light of a traveler's lantern, scrawling them in a small volume, a condensed copy of the second book of Niln, a work in progress. The High Scribe had left his library at home, with the exceptions of the first and second books of Niln and an old leather journal in which he had collected the prophecies of the seventh hero. And for 3 days and 3 nights they did journey and stay at heroes' inns and taverns along the way. It was initially surprising to Niln that there were inns and taverns that catered especially to professional heroes. Most of them just carried extra-large stocks of ale, nailed down the bar stools, and fireproofed the rooms, although one of the more upscale establishments offered amenities such as masseuses, equipment repair and cleaning, workshops for skilled heroes to create and upkeep their own gear or potions, and more. When they'd stayed in Vala's Song, a luxurious tavern complex with a fully stocked study and incredibly comfortable chairs, the goddess had been silent. Now that they were out on the open plain with nowhere to sit and write but a lumpy rock in his canvas tent, the scriptures flowed freely. And on the fourth day, as the heroes did cross yon plains of Bonn, they did encounter a venomous scarg. A venomous scarg, Niln learned, was a nasty sort of giant burrowing bat with poisoned fangs and beady scarlet eyes. Jin explained later that scargs are nocturnal scavengers that only attack solitary, helpless prey, and thus the specimen that had burst from the ground in front of Gorm's horse was most likely startled awake rather than springing an ambush. Whatever the scarg's intentions, the results were equally traumatic. Gorm, son of Inger, didst draw his axe and set to smite yon scarg a mighty blow, but Laruna Trollin did loose a fiery spell at the scarg at the same time, and Gorm did fall from his horse. It was more like the dwarf dove to the ground, Niln noted. A split second later, and Gorm would have been burned to a crisp. The scarg did fly twixt the wizard Jin and the mage Laruna, and they did cast their spells hastily, and each did blast the other from their steeds. And the wizard Jin did fly into the high scribe Niln, who fell into the bard Heraldin, who was holding a grenade of smoke, which he dropped upon the ground. Niln nodded. He had been wondering what exactly had happened there. One moment he had been shouting to Gorm, and the next moment he was on the ground in a cloud of blue-black smoke. And yon fumes from the bard's grenade didst choke Caitha of House Tyriath, so that her arrow flew wild, and it struck the warrior Gaist upon the back of the thigh. This was a slight discrepancy, but only because the scriptures generally didn't mention one's rear end. And so Gaist did fall upon the mage Laruna. Laruna was blinded by yon smoke, and did assume it was the scarg atop her, and she did throw away many a mighty fireball in response, and the other heroes did flee from her wrath. Only Glebeck made it away unscathed, Niln recalled, and that was because Gorm had instructed the goblin to avoid the fight. Most of the heroes had needed a healing potion. Caitha had needed two. Then the smoke was blown clear, and yon scarg did fly away with much laughter, and the heroes were greatly chafed. But Gorm, son of Inger, was filled with great wrath, for the heroes were not prepared, and he did decree that they would have half rations and extra training that night. Niln acted as though he had agreed with the dwarf's recommendation, and that it was a mutual decision to impose the rigorous regimen upon the others. In truth, he didn't know if he could have changed Gorm's mind, and he was sure that he didn't want to try. Still, Niln knew the dwarf had more years of questing than Niln had years of living, and his experience was invaluable. There was nothing wrong with letting subordinates utilize their expertise, he told himself. So the heroes did train with much intensity that night, and there were no exceptions, not even for the high scribe to finish writing his— "What are you doing?" Gorm roared, sticking his head into the tent. "You're supposed to be training with Caitha and Glebeck."
I needed to write in my scriptures.
"Do it when training's done, and not a moment sooner," barked the dwarf. "Get out on the field."
Niln set his book down.
"I think that's a good idea," he said,
because he wanted to be clear that he was still in charge of this party. Then he hurried from the tent, because he didn't want Gorm to yell again. You have to admit she's pretty impressive, Laruna whispered. Gorn gave an appreciative nod. Across the clearing, Caitha moved along the perimeter of a squat, square tower as swiftly and as silently as a breeze. With her long emerald cloak flowing behind her as she darted from window to window, it was easy to see how she'd earned the name Jade Wind. Gorm whistled low as she scaled the exterior of the ruined tower, seemingly without effort, to peer through a third-story window.
Very impressive, Laruna reiterated.
When she's sober, Jin added.
Which hasn't been as often as one might have anticipated, Niln whispered.
Well, at least not as often as one might like, said Heraldin. Gorm nodded with considerably less appreciation. He'd been posting watches over Caitha since lunch yesterday to make sure she didn't touch a bottle before the raid on the old tower. Still, it was worth it. Caitha had finished scouting the ruins much faster than he had imagined, and she was already running back to the woods where the seven heroes were waiting. Once they had huddled just inside the undergrowth, Caitha began to deliver her findings.
All right, it's an old military tower. The main door to the tower opens into a small antechamber, 12 feet by 8 feet. There's a door to the west and to the north. Inside the room are some ruined tables and a rusted suit of armor, but nothing of value.
That's some really detailed information, Niln whispered to Gorm.
Aye, a true professional.
Gorm turned back to Caitha. What's through the west door?
A small dark room with only one window. It smells like the lizard men have been using it as a latrine.
Disgusting, said Laruna.
Okay, let's try the north door. It leads to a large room, 100 feet by 80 feet. There's a staircase leading up the eastern wall and a staircase down near the—
Wait. Let me get this straight.
Gorm kicked the leaves from a patch of earth and began drawing a crude map in the dirt with a stick.
So, there is an antechamber here.
Let me.
Caitha grabbed her own branch and filled out the rest of the map.
See, there's a door here, and these are windows, and here are the stairs down. There are painted stones and feathers all around it.
That'd be where they're performing the ritual, said Gorm.
What ritual? Niln asked. Do you know what they're doing?
Oh, the gods alone know what they're doing. But lizard men are always performing rituals to something or another.
Legends have it the Lizardkin were bred by Noros back in the Third Age, as commandos for Menon in the War of Betrayal, said Heraldin. To keep them fanatically loyal, even when far afield, Noros designed them to worship Menon. But when Menon fell, they still needed something to worship.
So now the little buggers will bow down to anything, said Gorm. Whenever a nest of them moves somewhere, they always find a weird-shaped rock or a cow with a funny marking or something and set it up as their god.
Interesting, said Niln.
It's all well and good until they start stealing things to offer to their newfound deity, said Laruna.
Or making sacrifices to it, said Gorm. Livestock, pets, even people. They keep on giving it bigger and more elaborate rituals. Whatever they've found to make a god of, I'm sure they're keeping it in that basement. And if they took the marbles, that's where they'll be. I'll wager it's well guarded.
Caitha nodded. There are 4 lizard men in the large room. 2 by the stairs, 1 by the north window.
Hang on, said Heraldin, and he ran off to the clearing where they had left the horses. He returned with his thrones set and placed 4 of the bannermen on Caitha's map. All right, go on.
Right. So there are lizard men here, here, and here, said Caitha.
So what do we do? Asked Niln.
We'll assemble in the antechamber, said Gorm. Warriors in the front, mages in the middle, bard and ranger at the back.
Hang on, said Heraldin. More thrones pieces were added to the map after a brief argument as to which piece would be used for each hero.
Right, said Gorm. So, we burst through the door.
It's locked, said Caitha.
What? You sure? Lizard men don't usually make use of anything more complicated than a spear, and even then they have trouble keeping track of the pointy end.
Oh, yes. There's a giant padlock on the door.
They may have accessed the basement through an underground passage, said Jin.
We could go searching for the secret tunnel, suggested Niln.
No need, said Gorm. Look, a lock ain't enough to stop us. We'll just move the mages to watch the back door, set Geist and I up to support Heraldin, and we can get through it in no time.
He shuffled the pieces around the map.
I can't get off a good spell at that angle, said Laruna.
And what about the secret passage, said Heraldin.
It could be miles from here, said Caitha, setting off a wide-ranging argument that started at the average size of secret entrances, passed through mixed-unit tactics and proper ways of maintaining a line of sight to a target, and wound up back at the best way to storm a tower.
Look!
barked Gorm.
"It's simple. We just need the bard to pick that lock, and then we move in like we planned."
"Oh, I'm not picking that lock," said Heraldin, casually snacking from a parcel of crisped potatoes.
"Rongo da."
"What do you mean you ain't picking that lock? You're the closest we got to a thief."
"Listen, friend, I know I was once a member of a less reputable profession." "I'm not sure that's possible," muttered Jin. "But my illicit ways are over. I've given them up for clean and simple living."
"All I seen you do is drink and chase tavern maids."
"Relatively clean and simple living," Heraldin amended.
"Rongo da!"
Gorm shook his head.
"It's just a simple lock in an abandoned tower."
"Oh, it starts that way, yes. But once you've felt the click of the pins and tumblers, once you've seen a lock snap open, something stays with you. You'll have the itch again, and every locked door looks like a wrapped present, and every pocket holds a surprise just for you."
Heraldin shook the wistful look from his eye. "Soon you're stealing anything you take a shine to, and soon after that you find yourself taking a shine to anything you don't already own. And then Benny Hookhands finds out you're back in town and kills you, if you're lucky."
"Enough," said Gorm. "Spare me the excuses. You're picking that lock."
"I'm not. I don't even have lockpicks with me," said Heraldin.
"Gleeback?"
"What kind of thief doesn't carry lockpicks?" exclaimed Laruna.
"The kind that's actually a bard," snapped Heraldin. "Why is this so difficult to understand?"
"Well, for starters, I've yet to hear you sing a song," said Laruna.
"And you can't really play the lute very well at all," added Jin.
"And there's this general oily sleaziness about you," said Caitha.
"Hey!"
said Heraldin. "To be fair, a lot of bards have that, too," Laruna said.
"Exist?"
said the lizard man.
"Now listen, I'm sorry if I'm not your typical bard, but that doesn't—"
Heraldin stopped short. The heroes stared at each other, communing in unpleasant realization, before turning as one to the short, bipedal reptile leaning on a spear between Niln and Gleebeck. Gleebeck threw up his arms in exasperation.
"The spirit rah!"
"Bloody ashes!" swore Gorm.
The lizard man extended the vibrant crest on its scaly head, gave an open-mouthed hiss, and darted away.
"Don't let it warn the others!" cried Caitha.
Gorm was already charging after the scout, the other heroes falling in behind him. Yet lizard men survived by compensating for their considerable shortcomings in stature, strength, and intelligence through sheer speed. The lizard man had already reached the tower by the time the heroes emerged from the woods. With a weird whistling cry, it scrabbled up the wall of the tower and slipped between the bars of the window.
"Guess there wasn't any thrice-cursed secret tunnel," sniped Laruna as the heroes skidded to a halt.
"What now?" panted Niln, coming up behind them.
"Brace yourself," said Caitha.
A chorus of reptilian shrieks rose from within the tower. As the cacophony reached its crescendo, the old building erupted with lizard men. They poured from every window, hissing and spitting and waving crude weapons.
"Stay together!"
roared Gorm as the scaly tide rushed at them. The heroes pressed back into a tight ring, with Niln and Gleebeck in the center. The oncoming lizard men parted and flowed around the heroes like a river around a stone, ringing them in but remaining an arm's length away.
"What's happening?"
Niln shouted.
"Lizard men may be fanatics, but they ain't particularly brave,"
Gorm hollered back.
"If they can't separate one of us from the pack, they won't press in."
A lizard man lunged forward, jabbing with a crude spear. Gorm easily deflected the blow, but he knew it wasn't the real assault. Lizard men needed time to build up their courage. Everyone that attacked and lived made the throng behind it that much bolder. Already another warrior was darting forward to test Gorm.
"Drive him back!"
he shouted, dispatching the assailant with a quick blow from his axe.
"Keep the fear in him!"
"What are you doing?"
Caitha shouted to Jin as she notched an arrow. Her shot took down a forward lizard man and scattered its companions.
"Cast a spell!"
"Sorry, but I'm not used to being jostled while trying to weave the raw energy of the universe!" snapped Jin. Gorm had seen the Noctomancer quickly erect a sorcerous shield in front of himself, but the wizard had not managed to cast a single spell afterwards. Heraldin's elbow caught the Noctomancer's shoulder as the bard stabbed an encroaching lizard man, and the weave Jin was trying to craft melted away.
"Watch yourself!"
"I just watched myself save your pale skin," snapped Heraldin, dodging a thrust from a stone spear. "Just throw some magic at them!" With an indignant harumph and a quick gesture, Jin sent a burst of violet energy arcing at the nearest lizard man. The creature shrieked and withered away like a flower in a desert wind.
Well, the weave was a little cruder than normal, but...
All around the heroes, fountains of flame blasted skyward with a thunderous roar, sending spouts of charred and screaming lizard men high into the air. Gorm could feel his whiskers singeing as the front ranks of the lizard men were decimated. The surviving reptiles fell back from the sorcerer's flame, shielding their eyes and gibbering in terror. Laruna blew a wisp of smoke from her finger.
"Nice kill, new blood," she called to Jin. "See if you can get a second." "Goddess above!"
Niln was slack-jawed as charred lizard men rained down around them. Jin only scowled and shriveled another unfortunate lizard man with a blast of necrotic sorcery.
"Ha!" laughed Gorm. "Look at him, Scarper!"
The tide of scales was receding as fast as it had flowed in. Every lizard man who was still capable of running was darting back toward the tower.
"But what are they doing?"
asked Niln. Instead of climbing back through the tower, the lizard men began running and dancing in rings about it. Their whoops and cries fell into a unified rhythm.
"They're calling to whatever god they found," said Gorm.
A deep bellow from beneath the tower answered the sibilant chant of the lizard men, like the rumblings of a distant yet not distant enough storm.
"What was that?"
Panic rose in Niln's voice. Gorm gritted his teeth.
"Bone and ashes. Their gods answering!"
A dark shape eclipsed the tower windows. The roaring from within was drowning out the ecstatic cries of the lizard men.
"I thought you said they worshipped rocks and cows," said Jin.
The lizard men's god slammed against the wall of the tower, shaking dust and mortar from the stones. The heroes took an instinctive step back in unison.
"Whatever it is, it's big," said Katha. "How did it get into the tower in the first place?"
Laruna said.
"A secret passage,"
said Heraldin triumphantly, just as a mountain of muscle and scales tore a new and far less secret passage through the side of the tower. The beast's beady reptilian eyes found the heroes, and it let loose another ear-shattering roar.
"Stone Drake!"
hollered Gorm. Stone drakes were among the basest of the dragon kin, usually encountered in one of three conditions: eating, sleeping, or violently furious about whatever was impeding their eating or sleeping. Essentially a toothy mouth propelled by six legs and a voracious appetite, a stone drake was nothing if not straightforward, mostly because turning took too much effort. The specimen standing in the rubble of the tower had been slathered in garish cobalt and lemon paints, with wooden totems and bunches of crimson feathers jutting from every ridge and crag in its scales. The makeup and accessories that the lizard men had bestowed upon the drake seemed to have done little to improve its mood. It opened its great maw and charged at the heroes, its throng of worshippers cheering the dragonkin on.
"Scatter!"
yelled Gorm, already in motion. The heroes broke apart and sprinted off in different directions. Gorm quickly turned, arcing back toward the drake. The key to fighting a stone drake was to stay out of its path. Given how cumbersome a 3-ton hybrid of stone and dragon could be, avoiding one was fairly easy, as long as you didn't run in a straight line directly away from it. He glanced back to check the position of the drake, and his heart dropped into his stomach. The High Scribe of Almatra was sprinting in a straight line directly away from the stone drake. Niln held the hem of his robe up around his waist. His sandals flapped with the mad pumping of his bony legs, but he hadn't close to enough speed to outrun the engine of tooth and scale bearing down on him.
"Niln!"
Gorm screamed.
"Get out of its way!"
"Well, we all knew he'd wind up getting killed," said Heraldin, running up beside the dwarf.
"If the High Scribe dies, the guild will see us all hanged,"
Gorm snarled.
"Niln, dodge!"
screamed Heraldin. The drake was closing in for the kill. Then Gleebec was there. From nowhere, the tiny goblin leaped and tackled the High Scribe, sending them both flying out of the creature's path. The stone drake bellowed in angry confusion as momentum carried it past its prey.
"Run!"
screamed Katha. Goblins, however, need no prompting to flee. The only thing their race excels at is retreat. The stone drake hadn't finished skidding to a halt before Gleebec was on his feet, pulling Niln up. The pair was halfway back across the field, ducking projectiles hurled by the jeering lizard men, when the stone drake reoriented itself and started getting back up to speed. Gorm was running back toward them.
"Shoot it! Get it off Niln!
The other heroes sprang into action. Gaist hurled throwing knives, and Caitha fired arrows. Laruna unleashed another impressive blast of flame, and Jin fired off a couple of relatively unimpressive magical missiles. Yet projectiles bounced off the drake's scales, and sorcery washed over it like waves over a stone. The drake rushed forward, undeterred and gaining on its prey.
Gorm shook his head. It's still after Niln.
Of course, said Heraldin. Why wouldn't it go for the easiest meal?
The easiest meal?
A flash of inspiration struck Gorm.
Heraldin, ye and Gaist get in there and make Niln a bit harder to get hold of. I'll find our friend some easier targets.
Got it, said Heraldin, sharing a nod with Gaist. The bard charged to intercept the drake, drawing his dagger and rapier.
A bold offense distracts the foe while we launch a clever ploy. It's the Imperial offense!
What's the Imperial offense?
Jin shouted.
The most famous opening in Thrones,
Heraldin hollered back, running alongside the stone drake. His blades flashed in the sunlight as he slashed at the creature's legs. I use it all the time.
Don't you usually lose at Thrones?
Laruna yelled.
Huh, I suppose I do, said Heraldin, and then let out a startled cry as he dodged a swing from the stone drake's mace-like tail.
The bard was too off balance to totally avoid the backswing, and it was only through a feat of luck and dexterity that he managed to leap atop the tail and avoid being clubbed by it. The stone drake skidded to a halt, its meaty legs churning up soil as they backpedaled. A growl rumbled in its throat as it turned a beady eye to the bard clinging to its tail.
"Perhaps it looks like I have this under control," said Heraldin, as he tried to climb further up the drake's tail. "But some help wouldn't be amiss."
Then Gaist was there, a black specter gliding over the battlefield. The weapons master darted past the stone drake's face, lashing out with a pair of swords. Twin trails of black blood bloomed amid the yellow and blue paint on the drake's scales. The drake roared in pain. Glancing back at the battle, Gorm gave a snort of satisfaction. The beast was well distracted, between the bard on its tail and the weapons master dancing around it. Better still, the lizard men were wrapped up in the fight as well, cheering on their scaly deity and hurling unintelligible insults and small stones at its foes. Gorm knew that the lizard men couldn't have trained the stone drake. The Empire of Man spent several centuries trying to tame dragonkin, and they never managed better than teaching a sand drake to sit and roll over before eating its handler. Yet if the lizard men kept the stone drake well fed and comfortable, it was entirely possible it would start to see them more or less as scenery. The trick was to readjust the drake's perspective. He located a lizard man who had strayed too far from the pack, likely distracted by the spectacle of the drake fighting the other heroes. Gorm quickly closed the gap between himself and the spectator and seized the surprised lizard man's tail. The creature yipped and hissed in protest as Gorm lifted it above his head and swung it around and around like a bola until the perfect moment came when he released his grip. The lizard man sailed in a high arc through the air, screaming and tumbling, until it smacked against the side of the drake's head and flopped to the ground.
Bones! Gorm swore beneath his breath. Missed!
He launched another unsuspecting lizard man, and then another. Both bounced off the distracted drake with no effect. By the fourth attempt, the lizard men around Gorm had noticed what was happening, so Gorm had to disarm his ammunition by giving them a good punch or two before hurling them toward the target. It took 9 tries, but Gorm finally managed to get a perfect throw over the protests and jabs of the nearby lizard men. His hapless missile flew like an arrow into the gaping maw of the stone drake. A tense silence fell over the battlefield. The lizard men looked on in anxious confusion as the stone drake, initially confused by the assault with a long-range snack, thoughtfully champed on its victim before swallowing it. The dragonkin cocked its head to the side, smacking its lips as it reflected, and then grabbed one of the dazed lizard men that Gorm had bounced off its face and ate that as well.
"What's happening?"
shouted Heraldin, climbing down now that the drake's tail had fallen still.
"A taste test!"
shouted Gorm. Worried murmurs broke out among the lizard men, and a few started inching toward the woods. Perhaps sensing the shift in attitude, a lizard man bedecked in a priestly array of chicken bones and feathers hopped from the crowd. Boldly scuttling across the tower grounds, the scaly shaman stood before the drake, raised a staff above its head, and launched into an impassioned speech. The drake considered its babbling priest with a lazy eye, then it snapped him up in one bite. Gorm whooped, and the assembled lizard men shrieked as the priest's tail slid down the drake's gullet.
"Reconsiderin' your religion, eh?" Gorm laughed at a nearby lizard man. "I'd run if I was you."
The lizard man raised its crest and hissed at him, but it took his advice anyway and scampered off. Many of its companions were experiencing similar crises of faith. By the time the stone drake had finished off the last of the dazed lizard men Gorm had hurled at it, most of its worshippers had fled. With a hungry roar, the stone drake charged at the stragglers, sending them running in search of safer homes and more docile idols. Katha trotted up to Gorm.
"Well, that takes care of that," she said,
watching the stone drake disappear into the woods.
"Now what?"
said Laruna. She and Jin held a panting Niln between them, Gleebec hopping along at their feet. Gorm turned to the rubble that had been the tower's western wall.
"Now we finally get to see what them lizards were keeping in their tower."
"Nothing," said Jin. Gorm gave a grim nod.
It wasn't that the tower was empty. It was actually difficult to maneuver through the heaps of offerings and tributes the lizard men had set before their god, but the lizard men failed to take current market trends into account when choosing their sacrifices. He'd often heard it said that one man's trash was another's treasure, but in his experience, the opposite was more often the case.
"It's all garbage," Heraldin said, kicking at a rusted plow that had been decorated with chicken bones and rat pelts. Lizard men had hoarded animal skeletons, wooden signs, wagon wheels, smithing tools, hunting knives, and many other mundane trinkets that, while undoubtedly valuable in the realm of reptile spirituality, were completely worthless to professional heroes.
"What's that?"
shrieked Niln, pointing to an eerie amethyst glow near Jin, emanating from a sphere about a hand's width in diameter set atop a black iron frame.
"It's just an attunement orb," said Jin, stepping closer to the sphere. The light grew slightly more intense. "It must have belonged to the omnimancers the lizard men displaced. They use it to see which side of magic they're attuned to."
The warp and the weft of high magic invisibly alter a person who channels their energies. The more noctomancy or solomancy a mage weaves, the more his or her flesh becomes attuned to that side of sorcery. A benefit of strong attunement is resistance to one's chosen discipline. Archmage Eye of the Moon are all but immune to noctomancy, just as solomancy can barely touch Archmage Eye of the Sun. The downside is a vulnerability to the opposing school of magic, and the fact that each order's greatest rival wielded their greatest weakness did little to improve relations between solomancers and noctomancers. Most mages considered attunement spheres more of a nuisance than a tool. Solomancers, for example, don't need to be shown they're attuned to solomancy, nor does knowing how susceptible they are to noctomancy make the idea of getting hit by a death spell any more or less attractive. Omnimancers, however, could be ripped apart by the conflicting energies they channeled if too far attuned one way or another, and therefore took a much more active interest in their current level of attunement. The orbs were a telltale sign that the defunct Order of Twilight had found a space to convene. Jin gave the orb the derisive sneer that mages everywhere reserved for anything associated with omnimancy. "I'll find a blanket or something to cover it."
"Why?" asked Niln.
"What's the commotion?" asked Laruna, rushing into the basement from the upstairs, and the heroes were nearly blinded as the attunement sphere flared with radiant golden light. Heraldin reeled and nearly fell into the deep tunnel the stone drake had burrowed into the cellar.
"It's an attunement sphere," snarled Jin, shielding his eyes.
"Thrice cursed omnimancers,"
cried Laruna, staggering back up the stairs. Once the heroes could see again, they located an old rug and threw it over the sphere. Gorm took the opportunity to take Niln aside.
"Are you all right?"
he asked the high scribe. The high scribe glanced around the room.
"Why do you ask?"
he whispered, when he was sure nobody was listening.
"Well, you're sweating like a scribkin cook at an ogre's grill. You ain't said three sentences since we fought the lizard men, and one of the sentences you did manage was screaming in terror at a glass orb with an apprentice's cantrip. And trust me, I ain't the only one who's noticed it."
I know, said Niln softly.
He deflated as he let out a sigh.
"I knew I wasn't the typical hero when we began this quest. but I always thought that conflict was the crucible of destiny, that once I was baptized in the fires of battle, something deep inside me would awaken.
And it wasn't there.
Niln winced as though the words stung.
Maybe. The prophecy says an ancient power lies dormant within me, but it seems to be in a deeper sleep than I imagined. Instead of becoming the hero I'm meant to be, I was saved by a squire.
Aye,
said Gorm, giving an appreciative glance to where Gleebec lay. The goblin had saved the other six heroes from the gallows when he pushed Niln out of the stone drake's path, and as a reward, Gorm had granted him all of the edible spoils from the tower. Unfortunately, the spoils lived up to their name, and worse still, Gleebec had a much more liberal definition of edible than Gorm had imagined possible. The squire's feast had been such a disgusting spectacle that the heroes had all made polite excuses and left the room. Now, however, Gleebec had finished his rotten reward, and he was dozing comfortably by a pile of dirty dishes and discarded bones.
I wanted to fight. I wanted to rise up and lead us to glory, but we came so close to death, and we sent so many lizard men to Mordo Og's gate.
Niln stared into space, watching the memory of flaming lizard men fall.
It was horrible.
That's the job, said Gorm with a shrug. Find foes, kill 'em, try not to die. Professional heroics in a nutshell. Take it or leave it, 'cause the guild ain't changing.
The High Scribe shook his head.
I cannot leave it, though the idea holds more appeal than I care to admit. What will it take to turn me into a hero? How many more horrors will I face before that finally happens?
I'd wager you'll be seeing a lot more, and a lot worse than you saw here today, said Gorm.
Really?
Aye, because the elven marbles clearly ain't here.
Gorm looked around the dank, cluttered cellar that was the ruined remains of the Temple of the Stone Drake.
We're headed to the Mirewood.